Today on Bruce Springsteen, C-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E- Hey, everybody, and welcome to Bruce Springsteen Sings the Alphabet. It is the only podcast on the internet where we talk about every single Bruce Springsteen song in alphabetical order. I'm JB Clark. I'm joined, as always, by Rob Carmack. Rob, how are you doing tonight?
JB, I'm doing fine. How are you? We don't necessarily
agree
to keep doing that, but
nip this in the bud.
Yeah,
I just realized how annoying. You know, it's fun in the intro, and then it kept it going, and then you did it. And I was just like, "Yeah, this is gonna get."
Oh no! What have we done?
We are gonna. Part of me was kind of like, "We should commit. We should do it."
Yeah, we don't have to commit any further.
And then everyone would be like, "Unsubscribe!" Yeah. Unsubscribe! Yeah.
I think I don't know about you, JB. I've got it out of my system. I'm fine now.
I could do it forever, but it's not because it's a good thing to do.
No, it's definitively the wrong thing to do. But you know,
I will say this: I'm listening to it right now, and it is infectious.
It is. It's a really infectious song. So
yes,
as you mentioned,
it
JB,
is viral in that like, not like oh everyone loves this. It is viral in that like I have a disease now.
It does stay with you.
That's
hardcore. So the song that we're talking about today, yeah, as JB has mentioned, is the song "The Ties That Bind." This is from the 1980 album "The River," which is the second episode in a row where we're talking about this album.
The first cut off "The River" is the first thing you heard when you put "The River" on.
Track one, side one, disc one.
That's right.
And this, not only that, this was the original title for this album, "The River." Before "The River" was ultimately extended into a double album, the original incarnation of this record was going to be a single album called "The Ties That Bind," and later on became a box set that was released in 2015 called "The Ties That Bind: The River Collection," and basically sort of offering us a glimpse into an alternate universe where Bruce recorded all those songs that he intended to go on the single disc and all the other songs.
I will say that I am confident that if he had just put out "The Ties That Bind," I would have loved it still. Very much. Like, it would have been pretty high on my list of records.
If you go look at the track listing, it's no joke, man. I mean, he definitely brought his A game. Well, and that's partially why he needed it to be a double disc, is because he felt like he was putting out like really great, like top notch material, and he needed more space to say what he wanted to say. So the first disc was so good, Bruce was like, I can double this and make it even better. And he didn't do it.
But he changed the narrative a little bit.
He did.
When he moved to the river. And that is why I love the river. Like deeply love the river.
Yeah. No pun intended. Deep river.
Yeah.
River deep.
Wide, strong. I love it. The
Mountain
river.
High.
I would have really, really, really enjoyed "The Ties That Bind." Like, it still would have been like a record that I talk about regularly. But the river is like it's like a lifestyle. It's a movement.
It's a great album, and this is track one, and this is exactly the correct track one for this album. This is what you want to enter into this world with.
This is like 60s, 70s rock hero putting out a record at the end of 1980. So you're thinking, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in music, and you're like, what's going to happen? Does he still have it? And he puts. You know, and I would have, if I'm doing the river, I would have structured it totally differently. That's why I'm not famous. He puts this bad boy first track. I would have never done that. And he does it, and it kicks it off. It just really gets you. The River is one of the best structured song-to-song records.
It really is.
It brings you up. It gets you pumped. It brings you down. It breaks you open. It busts out the duct tape. It puts you back together. It fills you back up. And then it leaves you sort of questioning. It's incredible. And this song like kicks that all off with just these whimsical guitars. Almost unaffected guitars. Like, not even that rock and roll guitars. And just Gary Talent being just a bad dude on the bass. And it is such a fun kickoff. It is such a fun kickoff.
I would make the argument that The River may be Bruce's best tracked album. You know what I mean? Like, all of his albums are great.
Yeah.
With a few exceptions. But most of Bruce's albums are great with a capital G. This album, though, the structure of this album is part of what makes it great. The songs are great, but the way he constructs like the tracks. This album is perfectly constructed, and this and exemplified by the fact that this is track one. You know.
Well, yeah. So we talk about like "Darkness on the Edge of Town" is a perfect record, right?
Yes.
And like "Born to Run" is real close to a perfect record, and then his first two records were like these just incredible and like time capsules, right? And we all know how I feel about Wrecking Ball and how we feel about Magic, and he's got these just huge albums that you know makes putting together a top five list of records super difficult.
It does.
But The River might be like his best album, like to the world. You know what I mean? If you're a music critic, Darkness on the Edge of Town is the pinnacle, right? But if you're a human being, The River is one of the best, is one of the absolute best records ever made.
It's infinitely listenable. It's got a lot. Yeah, for sure.
It's like mixing sort of nostalgia, music nostalgia with also music of the times and really convicting songs and also really passionate songs and just party songs. And it really, I mean, they wanted to make a record that felt like you were watching them live at the Stamponi, and they did.
They did it.
And every band is always like, we just want to capture that energy on this record. And no one does.
Yeah.
This record does.
He does.
And this song kicks it off. This song is why you listened to The River, because you put this on and you were into it. And then after the sax solo, when they do that like weird snare roll, three chord progression, like real quick, you know, you're like, all right, I'm in for the rest of this. That was cool. I love this song because of the album. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This song would not be my favorite song on, and it's not my favorite song on this album. It wouldn't be like my favorite song on most albums or any album. But because it kicks this album off so perfectly, I'm just passionate about it.
Let me get a few basic facts out of the way.
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, do that, and then we'll get back to the music.
Okay. So, as we mentioned before, this is track one, side one, On the River from 1980. The most recent performance of this song in a live setting was on February the 14th, 2017, in Brisbane, Australia, on that particular leg of the 2016-2017 River Tour. Obviously, this was played every single night of the first leg of the 2016 North American River Tour, where Bruce was playing the whole album. So he would come out, he would open the show with Meet Me in the City, and then he would do sort of like this introductory soliloquy about kind of what The River as an album was, and then he would launch into The Ties That Bind to kick off the whole record. So, but the most recent performance, February 2017 in Australia, Bruce performed this song on Saturday Night Live on their Christmas episode in 2015 to promote The Ties That Bind box set. So he played two songs that night, the first song, or actually I guess technically he played three songs. So he played, he played Meet Me in the City, for the first segment. The second segment, they did The Ties That Bind, and then they came back to close the show with Santa Claus Is Coming to Town with Paul McCartney.
Oh,
so, nice. So yeah, I guess technically they did three songs. So, but two as like promotional material for the box set. And this was one of the songs. So this song played really heavily into the promotion for that box set, as it would, because it was the title of the box set. Jim LaViglia of American Songwriter Magazine puts this song at number 90 on his list of Bruce Springsteen songs. So that's pretty good, pretty strong, number 90.
At the Rolling Stones got it at 79.
Also, okay, so pretty close. So both of them cracked the top 100. And yeah. I'd agree with that placement. I'm not totally finished. I've been working on my top 100 Bruce Springsteen songs for several months now.
I'm so putting it off because it seems so stressful.
It's taking me a really long time to do it. But Ties the Bind is, I think it's in the 80s somewhere for mine. But I don't remember off the top of my head. But anyway.
I may have like songs. Here's where I'm at. It's like I think that I would rate some songs that I have higher or lower. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm having that hard time too. I'm using my ratings from the show, and a lot of times I'm letting that influence where I put songs, and I think like sometimes that's not quite right. And
yeah, I think the song's going to end up being pretty high for me.
Yeah,
Which is fine because it's awesome. Yeah. And I'm judging the song. We're supposed to be judging them just based on the song, but like I cannot separate The Ties That Bind from The River.
Well, and that's a common denominator among Bruce Springsteen's music, right? Because a lot of a lot of what we're experiencing isn't just the song in isolation. Most Bruce Springsteen songs don't occur in a vacuum. They're handed to us as part of a fuller album construction. So it is difficult to listen to a lot of these songs and divorce them from their context. I mean, with a few notable exceptions like Streets of Philadelphia or songs that were released first as singles.
Or on Tracks.
Yeah, Tracks is a whole other animal. But I mean, I find that the best songs, the songs that I respond to strongest on Tracks, are the ones that I can put into the context of the album that they were written for. Like earlier today, I was listening I was listening to the song Brothers Under the Bridge, and I was thinking, man, this is my favorite Ghost of Tom Joad song, and it's not on the album The Ghost of Tom Joad. But I listened to it, and I put it in that time frame. Like, I listened to Brothers Under the Bridge, and I think of it as a 1995 song because I align it so closely, because it's such a it's the best Ghost of Tom Joad song that never made it onto that album. And the same with A Good Man Is Hard to Find. Like, I put that in the realm of Nebraska / Born in the USA, and that makes a lot of sense to me. So the songs on Tracks that I respond to, I recontextualize in connection to the album that they were intended for, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and then you've got between The Promise and The Ties That Bind and some of Tracks, like, you also have this doo-wop record that we've constructed that is though not an official release in any imagination of the world, one of my favorite Bruce Springsteen records. It's slowly moving up the list, this doo-wop record that doesn't exist.
Well, I mean, no kidding. If you go and if you listen to The Promise as if it's a double album of mostly doo-wop records that Bruce put together, if you think of it in that way and not just as a box set of deleted tracks, I think it makes it better. I think if you think of it in that context, it improves the quality of the whole album, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a couple of Ties of Bind songs and what else did I just say?
The Promise.
I said something else though, didn't I? And I think there's a few on Tracks too. Yeah. I think there's a few on those two records too that you could sprinkle into that doo-wop record and just have this incredible double doo-wop album. That I just wish he would. I would go buy it. I'd go buy that box set. Just, you know, if he put some artwork out and renamed it. Like, I've been waiting on that record.
Man, just make it yourself. That's the beauty of living in the digital age. You can just create the doo-wop record. You can create the doo-wop record that I've Bruce never made. On. Say what?
I said I have a playlist I've been working on. I just haven't finished it.
Well, keep it up. All right. Yeah. So
there's a few Ties of Bind songs on it. There's three so far, and it's not finished though.
Well, you got some time.
My whole life.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say until the end of this podcast, or until the end of our.
Oh yeah. Oh dang.
Because you can present it. We could do a whole episode where we talk about alternate albums.
All right, that'll be my homework. I'm excited about
this
project.
I mean, I think we have 70-ish episodes left of songs, and then you know, we'll figure out what to do after that. But so you were talking about music before, though, and you're talking about the guitars. The song is there's some cited influences for this song. It's influenced by the song "Who'll Stop the Rain" by Creedence Clearwater Revival, which is not a big surprise because Bruce actually used to cover that a lot on his earlier tours. In fact, I discovered as I was doing all these. As I was listening to all these songs from previous tours, that Bruce really loves to play that song for something. I like that song too. It's just interesting. Of all the CCR songs, "Who'll Stop the Rain" seems to be one of his favorites. And so, there seems to be some influence of that here. Also, the guitar riff is influenced / borrowed from a song called "Needles and Pins" by the Searchers. And people often listen to the song, they make comparisons to early power pop groups like Big Star or Badfinger.
Yeah.
You know?
I hear Big Star, man.
Yeah, I love Big Star.
I didn't make that connection, but yeah, absolutely. That's totally sort of unaffected, but still somehow super rock and roll guitar tone.
Yeah.
And they're doing some really neat melodies and chord variations between the two guitars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Doing that, whenever you're playing piano or a bass and a guitar, and you do a chord with a different bass note, in a much deeper way between the two, because both guitars are really moving, and it's tonally a little bit thin, but it's still really rock and roll for some reason.
Yeah.
It almost has a surf rock tone. Like, if you added some vibrato to it, it would feel surf rocky.
Well, because he's using the higher strings, I guess, on the guitar riff.
Yeah, but even the tone is even like a little brittle. It's not even just the higher string. I mean, that's a big part of it, but it's like I don't know what kind of pickup that is. It's just like a little brittle, but it's still sort of powerful. I don't know. And then it's mostly that until like the 2 minute mark when the sax goes the distance with a 35 second solo. Goes the distance, and Gary goes the distance with him. Gary really, really fills out that sax solo at
Gary
the 2 minute mark.
On the bass.
Yeah, and then that's followed by one of the coolest choppy snare roll chord progressions to bring everything back in at like 35.
Yeah, it's oh huge change. Gosh.
Yeah, and it's it's just so, like, the drums are like, ba-da-rump, 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 ba-da-rump. And the guitar is playing, like, or the whole band are playing, like, chords that fit but sort of don't make sense. You're sort of, what? Oh, we're in a different key now.
That is a key change, right? That's not my ears playing tricks on me.
I think so. Let's check real quick.
The Who's Gonna Stop the Rain?
Yes.
Because it seems to, like, stair-step up to a key change.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're in a different key.
That's pretty cool.
It's super cool. Yeah.
Well, you want to do the lyrics?
Well, real quick, two more musical notes.
Oh, sure.
I think the melody here is so indicative of the times. I kind of said this a little bit earlier, but like, here is a 1960s, 70s rock god putting out, like, what's the first thing you do in the 80s? This. It's perfect. It is perfect. This melody.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it's group vocals. It's very, you know, this sets up that whole, like, we want people to feel what it's like to be in the bar with us feeling. And then Max rolls everyone in and out of all the choruses. And then Gary brings, like, walks everyone into the verses, which is really cool. So the drums, Max on the drums is like, you know, out of the choruses. And then Gary, you know, walks them into the verse. So it's like this cool sort of handoff. Where there's a little bit of dissonance in between the two sections of the song, and I think that makes the song just like a really nice digestible pieces.
Mm. Yeah,
and that's what that really draws me in, sort of in a subconscious way. It took me a while to realize that that's what that was.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Lyrics. Yeah. You've been hurt, and you. You're all cried out, you say. You walk down the street pushing people out of your way. You packed your bags, and all alone, you want to ride. You don't want nothing. You don't need no one by your side. You're walking tough, baby, but you're walking blind. The ties that bind, the ties that bind. Now you can't break the ties that bind.
So it's a person who has been hurt, she's been jilted, she's been wounded in a certain way, and she's pretty much just saying, like, I don't need other people in my life anymore. I'm all done.
Yeah. I can do this solo. You guys are making it hard.
Yeah.
A cheap romance. You say it's all just a crush. You don't want nothing that anybody can touch. You're so afraid of being somebody's fool. Not walking tough, baby. Not walking cool. You walk cool, but darling, can you walk the line? To me, that's sort of just, like, really cool rock and roll Mad Libs a little bit.
Okay.
But it just reiterates that first verse, you know?
Uh-huh.
No thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'm still sort of I think the next the bridge, I think, really encapsulates what the song
say
is about.
The bridge is like the tie that binds it all together.
Yeah, the bridge ties it all together. It binds it.
You walk cool, but darling, you can you walk the line and face the ties that bind? The ties that bind. Now, can you break the ties? Now, you can't break the ties that bind. Whoa, whoa. I'd rather feel the hurt inside. Yes, I would, darling. Yes, I would, darling, more than I know. Then know the emptiness your heart must hide. Yes, I would, darling. Yes, I would, darling. Yes, I would, baby.
Saxophone solo.
Saxophone solo.
So this here.
Key change.
The bridge here, I think, says what the song is really about. And the line of, I would rather feel the hurt inside than know the emptiness your heart must hide. And this is really interesting, because this song is written in 1980. And this is a long time before Brené Brown would ever write any of her books. Because Brené Brown, for those who don't know who she is, she's a writer, researcher, social worker, and she does a lot of work on the notion of shame and empathy and connection and disengagement from, like, human, like, basically, like, what are the cost of human connections? And so a lot of Brené Brown's writing has to do with, basically, one of the things that she advises people is don't become so hard-hearted that you, basically, like, yeah, you've been wounded. And that wounding makes you say, like, I can't let anybody in. I have to remain guarded because being guarded is the only way to keep me from being wounded again. But the problem with that is when you're that guarded, you not only do you cut off your capacity for hurt, but you also cut off your capacity for love. And so, like, because it all flows through the same channel. And so what the songwriter – and so it's interesting. Like, we enter into this album where, like, a lot of times the narrator of the song is kind of like trying to figure it out and doesn't know a lot and is like kind of making mistakes as they go. Here, the narrator is sort of like an omnipotent, like wise person, and is saying, like, I would rather feel the hurt inside than know the emptiness your heart must hide. In other words, like that thing that made you cut yourself off, all that hurt, yeah, that's awful and it's painful. But that posture of like no one's getting in, that doesn't just keep you from feeling hurt. It keeps you from feeling love. And the opportunity to feel love is worth the risk of feeling more hurt, is what he seems to be saying. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really beautiful sentiment.
Yeah. And thank you to Brené Brown for pointing that out.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I've got.
That's where we're at. That's the end of the lyrics.
Oh, no, you sit and wonder.
We got the.
This is my favorite part because it moves. I love the key change part, and this is my favorite lyric. So go ahead.
Yeah, and then like to be super referential, you sit and wonder just who's going to stop the rain.
As if we didn't know that this whole song was influenced by the song "Who'll Stop the Rain." Yeah,
I love that. And then because whenever you mention it, it is no longer theft; it is now
tribute.
Tribute. Yeah. So who will ease the sadness? Who's going to quiet your pain? It's a long, dark highway and a thin white line. Connecting, baby, your heart to mine. We're running now, but darling, we will stand in time to face the ties that bind.
And then you can't the ties break that bind. The ties that bind. Yeah.
Now you can't break the ties that bind. You can't forsake the ties that bind. Whoa, 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 whoa.
I think it is really telling and really profound that this is the first track on this giant 20-song album that the whole album deals with so much complexity and so much like relational, like you've got people in the river who are like trying, like basically like giving up their dreams in order to like quote do the right thing and like be responsible. You've got people in Hungry Heart who are doing the opposite. You've got The Price You Pay. Independence Day, you've got Wreck on the Highway, like you've got Drive All Night, you've got all these different songs that sort of live in different spaces of relational and relational awareness and human consciousness. And the whole conversation begins with this song. And this song is the first word on this whole giant coming of age album is Bruce is saying, life is hard, people will hurt you, but it is worth it. And your connection with other people makes all the difference in how you live the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That is profound. And that is brilliant. And that he chose to open this entire album with that message says everything we needed to know about what he wants to say in this album.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, that the album begins with this and then ends with Wreck on the Highway we haven't gotten to yet, but you know, Wreck on the Highway is about somebody who sees a wreck on the highway and he begins to sort of imagine like the loss of life and he goes home and like it changes his perspective and he climbs into bed and he's like lying next to the person he's married to and he's wondering like, you know, what if that were me? What if that was somebody I loved? And so you have this person who sees the permanent tearing of the ties that bind and it really deeply like disturbs him. So the beginning of the album is the ties that bind, like your connections are all that matter. And the end of the album is, oh my gosh, everything is temporary and we have to hold on to everything that we have while we have it. You know, like, oh my gosh, like this whole album is one giant idea and Bruce is a genius. That's all I have to say about that, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Absolutely.
That's, I don't know. What you got other thoughts?
I mean, just this sets the stage in such an, I mean, what you just said in such an incredible way. And I mean, like he says in his little soliloquy before he starts the show that like this is when he very much became interested in like stories about men and women and like work and love and adult, like becoming what it means to sort of become an adult and become your own. Mm-hmm. And this song is sort of about that in a vague way. Like what is it that will get us through all of this? It's going to be the ties that bind.
Yeah.
You know, for as sort of like, you know, rock and roll relationship Mad Libby as it can get it sometimes, like that's what it's about. And it's so upbeat and it's so positive. Even when it gets kind of like a little bit sad in places, it's so upbeat and positive. And it's just saying in such a happy way, I would rather feel the hurt, you know, than not know.
I'd rather feel hurt than emptiness.
Yeah, and then he gets into emptiness in a deep way in this record. But he's saying, like, right now, I am pumped about this. We're going to feel the hurt, and we're going to feel humanity. And I am pumped about this. And all the band is. And we're about to go on this journey together.
Yeah.
And it is such a great, like, stage setter. I don't know. It's a killer song. It's rock and roll, man.
It is rock and roll. It's so good.
Yeah.
How many Cheap Romances would you give this song?
Oh, five.
Yeah, me too. Dude, we are on a roll. 2019 is going to be the year of the five.
All fives. All fives. No fours, no threes, no twos, no ones in 2019. It's all fives.
Yeah. Which,
I don't know what we're doing next week.
I was going to say, I haven't looked very far ahead, but that can't be true. We can't live like this forever. We have to come down. But
we can do it.
It's been so good so far.
We're spending credit card money right now, baby.
Yeah, we are. We're making it rain. We're making it rain fives. Wow, man. Well, this was a good one. I'm glad we got to start the week with this song. This is a good one.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to start the year off this way. Like these have been. This has been like one of my favorite sort of series of recordings that we've done. Just it's so much fun. All of these have been so much fun.
Yeah, I mean the list of songs for 2019 so far have been shot out of a cannon. It's been pretty exciting so far.
It makes me a little bit worried. Like, well, if we did all of these, there are going to be some low places.
Well, not to bring us down too far, but and I don't know what your thoughts are on this next song, and I'm not prepared to talk about it yet. But the next song we're talking about is the song "The Time That Never Was."
So five stars. Or is it?
Yep.
Tune in next week.
Five. Everything's a five. So. Anyway, for those out there who are keeping score and have a spreadsheet, who are like, wait, really? Did they just give a five to The Time That Never Was? No, you have to wait till the next episode. Don't ask that question.
Oh, no. Just wait till the next episode.
So, all right. But yeah, the next episode will be The Time That Never Was. So, JB, any parting shots, anything we need to say before we go?
Just Happy New Year. It's 2019. Be good people and be better tomorrow than you were yesterday. And if you're not, you know, it's okay. Shake it off and try again tomorrow. It's 2019. Like, none of us ever thought we were going to see 2019, right? I mean, like, if someone said 2019, we were all just like, whatever, that's so far away. It's a hypothetical.
I can definitively say that in November of 2016, I definitely thought there would never be a 2019. So,
I mean, even before that, that was not even my first sort of apocalyptic. I read Left Behind when I was in, like, middle school.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I knew that we would be raptured, or the world, like the globe would heat to an insufferable temperature, or we would, you know, like there have been so many. It's 2019, guys. We're here. We've made it through a lot, and we've done it together. We are gonna be okay, and we just have to keep being better and keep listening to Bruce Springsteen. Thank you, guys, and also thank you guys for listening. Thank you for letting us do this. I know I should have done this like on the 2019 first episode of the year, but whatever. This has been a blast, and I'm still having fun this many years later.
Well, and here's the thing about our listeners, JB. They can't break the ties that bind.
They cannot break the ties that
bind. Once you subscribe to this podcast, you're bound to this podcast.
Yeah, no one has ever clicked unsubscribe.
I know for a fact
until just this moment.
Well, I know for a fact that that's not true because after that Stray Bullet episode, we got a scathing review, and we've never recovered. We had a listener, and they said, "I was with you all the way until you didn't love Stray Bullet." So, arrivederci, gentlemen, you're dead to me.
Arrivederci.
So for anybody out there who's like, if they don't love The Time That Never Was, so help me, 2 stars.
Hey, you don't know. You don't know. I may love it.
Yeah.
I may give it 5 stars. I'm a loose cannon.
Again, I don't know what
my rating is. I got a lot of positive energy in 2019.
I haven't actually thought enough about The Time That Never Was to be able to say at this very moment anything about it. All I know is that's the next song.
I'm always trying to find time to listen to that song, but it just seems like
there never was any time to listen to that song.
Yep, it's the way it feels.
Yep. All right, well, thank you, JB, for that word of encouragement. And thanks, everybody out there, for listening. And we will see everybody next time later on in the week with the song The Time That Never Was. We'll see you then.